I'm in town this weekend to visit my family, and that includes my nephews, one of whom is 5 and the other 2.5. And as I was watching them play earlier this weekend, even though they have a vast variety of toys, even though they have some brand new toys, like a remote control car, that they love, there was a cardboard box sitting on the floor that they decided was a fire truck, and one of them would get in it, and then the other one would come and try to get the one who was in the box out of the box, because this was the toy, this cardboard box, surrounded by other, much more elaborate toys that they had to have. What makes something ordinary good and worthy of desire? Today, when we celebrate the solemnity of the body and blood of Christ, what makes ordinary bread and wine good and worthy of such profound desire that our tradition, that our faith tells us ought to be directed towards it? One answer to this comes from an anthropologist named René Girard. And you'll have to pardon me, because I've heard a lecture about this last week that was excellent, and it's been on my mind ever since, and you have this risk that when something seems so good, when the nail seems so large and the hammer so apt, you just want to pound it in over and over again. So I apologize. I'll try to connect it, and I think it does connect. Girard says that human beings are driven by what he calls mimetic desire. That what we're really good at, in fact, what makes us most human, is the fact that we want to imitate each other, and we imitate each other in desiring. So one of the ways that human beings figure out that something is good and worthy of desire, maybe the primary way, is by seeing another human being desire it. So for instance, when it comes to food, it's not just that I'm hungry and the food fills my hunger, but that I see someone else enjoy the food. That teaches me to desire it. Or in the case of my nephews, it's rare that you can prove anthropological theory with 5-year-olds. Seeing the other one desire the cardboard box makes it absolutely necessary to have all of a sudden. Girard says that when mimetic desire drives us towards the same thing, and there's only one of them, and we can't all have it, we get what he calls mimetic rivalry, and that eventually this will provoke conflict and even violence and lead to a culture choosing a scapegoat on which to project all the violence and thereby discharge it. And in the second half of his life especially, when he came to read the Gospels, he realized that Christ's sacrifice on the cross unmasks this scapegoating mechanism. And so instead of a sacrifice working because of the violence, in Girard's reading, the sacrifice Christ offers on the cross, the sacrifice that provides the meal we share today, undoes that violence, unmasks the scapegoating for what it really is. Not an answer to the problem, but just a way of discharging it temporarily. As we ask that question, what makes something good and worthy of desire? And what do we do when we find our desires, either our own desires in conflict with each other, or our desires in conflict and in tension with the world around us, with something that seems like we have to have it, but it's scarce? How do we resolve that if we're not going to resolve it through violence, and if we're instead, as we're invited to do as Christians, going to resolve it somehow through the sacrifice on the cross? Another lesson from my nephews. When we sit down together to eat for a meal, whatever happens with the cardboard box is not going on. They don't need to grab food from each other's plates, and they don't want to. They'll make quite a mess sometimes, but that's not what's happening. It's not trying to take what the other one has. And I think, I'm not positive about this in terms of the anthropological theory, and this occurred to me initially on a bus on Friday on the way here, so it has not been well researched. Please don't get distracted by thinking that I might actually know what I'm talking about at a deeper level here. But I think that what's different about that is that in a meal, when we're seated together at table, mimetic desire works differently. Because there, what we're desiring in common is not just food, not just sustenance, grab as much of it as you can for yourself, but what we're desiring is exactly the sharing of the meal, something we're doing together. What we're desiring is to be at table, where we see each other, but being at table is something we can only do together. This theme of rivalry is threaded through, in a subtle way, today's readings. The first reading from Genesis, the bread and wine blessed by the priest Melchizedek, this celebrates the end of a time of conquest. Abraham taking the land that was promised him, the good land, the land that other people wanted too. Seated, listening to Jesus, listening to him preach, 5,000 men, we didn't count the women and children, so at least double that, probably more than that. There's this concern of there's not enough for everyone, so send them away. Concern that's not too far away from some of the present controversies animating our politics. There's not enough for everyone. Send some of them away. And instead what Jesus does is not simply to provide enough, but to provide a way to share it. The first thing he has the disciples do is to get them to sit down in groups of about 50. Groups small enough that you can actually recognize the other people in the group and recognize that what you're doing is a shared activity. If the only miracle there had been, bang, presto, lots of bread and fish, and a crowd of at least 10,000, all you've got is a riot. You've got a mob. You've seen these pictures on TV when food is dropped into a place that needs it and has none, if there's not some mechanism, some way to share it. The miracle of the Eucharist is not just the superabundance of what is good and worthy of desire. The miracle of the Eucharist is also that it is a meal. It is also in the way we are invited to share it. The miracle of the Eucharist is not just that the body and blood of Christ become present in bread and wine, but that the body and blood of Christ become present for us in bread and wine. That we become present as well at the altar of the sacrifice, yes, but also at the table of the Last Supper. That we are formed together as a community sharing this meal, that we are taught what is good and worthy of desire together, side by side. What the Eucharist does for us is not just to remake bread and wine into something more, but to remake us into something more. St. Augustine is always quoted here, reminding us that in the Eucharist we become what we receive. A mechanism that works in the mirror image and an elevation of the way food is usually received, being integrated into our own bodies, into our own life. In the Eucharist, together around this table, we are integrated in to the food we share. But I think that is also true, at a pretty basic level, of meals in general. That somehow at a meal, when we sit down together, when we forge that community, even if it's only for a moment at that table, we become something more than ourselves. And just for a moment, what is good and worthy of desire is not just the food before us ready to be consumed, but the community and the communion in which we receive it. There are so many different ways to talk about the signs, the symbols, the ways the Eucharist conveys itself to us. Just as there was a superabundance of food, 12 baskets left over at the scene in today's gospel, there's a superabundance of meaning in the Eucharist as well. But today, one of the meanings I'd like to invite us to focus on is the Eucharist as meal. The celebration, the sacrament, the Mass, as the table around which we're gathered in common and taught to desire something good. And to desire something good in common. Not just something good that can be shared, but something good that must be shared, that only exists as what it truly is when it is shared. Far better than a cardboard box, even when it's turned into a fire truck. Far better than any other meal we will ever share anywhere. Because this meal that forges us together, when we look at each other receiving it, we don't just learn to desire what the other one has. We learn to desire who the other one is. We learn to see each other as the body of Christ that we receive. Making this the true meal. Making this the heart, the reality that maybe all other meals only symbolize. How blessed we are to be gathered together at this table.